Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. Talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter. Welcome, everybody. This is Andrew Fetter, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. And I wish everybody else were, I guess, embracing Good Friday. It is a Good Friday, and for on Sunday, I guess it's Easter, so happy Easter to y'all. And, of course, for those celebrating Passover, we're in the midst of Passover, huh? I want to make a couple of announcements before I get into my show, and then the reason why I'm getting to, about to get into it later, I'll explain, because people were sending me curious of what kind of Seder I do, or what I did, and blah, 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 but nonetheless, I have to make a couple quick announcements, and again, I've actually about two upcoming shows. I feel honored to have, on April 12th, so circular calendar, Micah Hanks. He is the author of UFO Singularity. Now, Michael Hanks is not only a writer, but he's a researcher, lecturer, and a radio personality who has worked in addressing a variety of scientific concepts and unexplained phenomena. Over the past decade, his research has examined various approaches into studying the unexplained cultural phenomena, human history, and the prospects of our technological future as a species is influenced by science. He is also an author of several books, including Magic, Mysticism, and the Molecule, and as well as Reynolds Mansion and Invitation to the Past. So I look forward to that interview. It should be quite fascinating where we'll head to. I know we'll be talking mainly about his new book called The UFO Singularity, but perhaps we might get into unexplained phenomena that will be changing within our future. Now, the other person I'm going to have, and I've been trying to get him also on my show, is Jim Stein, or actually Dr. James Stein. He is author of Paranormal Equation. It is a new scientific perspective on remote viewing, clairvoyance, and other implacable phenomena. I actually look pretty interesting. I find this quite fascinating because he looks into, as from a scientific perspective, of psychic phenomena, which is clairvoyance, and other things of associated with that, which I'm really quite fascinated to see where science meets with metaphysics or shamanism with physics. I've often had a feel there's heading to a collision course with the two. And I'm going to find that they're both amazingly identical. Of course, that's on April 19th. So I look forward to that. And of course, you can look at both their books. For Michael Hanks, his book is The UFO Singularity. And I think it's also on Amazon.com. And The Paranormal Equation, James D. Stein, you'll also find that on Amazon as well. Now, a lot of people have been asking me, after my last show, I got a couple emails regarding what I discussed about Passover and the relationship to slave video freedom back and forth. And a lot of people who have never really experienced it, they ask me personally, what do I do? But first, before I do it, there's a famous quote, and it relates to a lot of things, and I think it's indicative to a lot of things that I try to explain, but you can take in your part. There's a famous Kabbalist, of course, his name is Ari Rav Yitzchak Isaac Gloria. He said, every created entity has a spark of godliness within it, a pinpoint of divinity that constitutes its soul. When we utilize something to serve the Creator, we penetrate its shell of mundanity and revealing and realizing its divine presence. Thus, we elevate these sparks, reuniting them with their source. I think that says all. And when I start getting into what I'm about to read to you, you'll have an understanding perhaps where this is. When I talk about the Haggadah, which is actually the prayer book, which I'm going to read out, it's not really a prayer book. It's sort of like storytelling with some mini prayers, but everything I'm going to do is in English. Exactly how I perform it. And it is in English, like I said. Now, this is not just about to our Jews, okay? This holiday is very metaphysical and indeed has its applications for all humanity, as I mentioned in the last show. It's definitely for all ears. Every soul and all human will benefit from its metaphysical understanding. In fact, everyone in this is a Seder. It applies to you. So again, thanks for listening and love and light. And now I will begin. Excuse me if my nose is a little stuffy here. The Passover Seder provides a form that encourages and supports a journey from slavery to freedom. But the mere repetition of words, no matter how ancient or meaningful, will not suffice. We are asked to enter the journey experimentally to again find the way to awaken to our freedom. Each year, we take this opportunity to release ourselves from the slavery of old patterns and beliefs. Our awakening to the stuck places in our lives begins with the journey to a fuller sense of self. Each of us has a responsibility for our piece of creation, but only from the deeper wisdom and compassion of our greater self can we appreciate and care for that piece of the world entrusted to us. The awareness we seek contains no blame for that which has been. We have begun instead to perceive a deeper meaning and purpose behind the life we have lived, and we sense the unfolding that is about to be. So we risk beginning with silence rather than rushing into words. We begin with quietly becoming aware of where we are now. Tonight is different from all other nights. The world looks and feels different. Tonight has its own textures, shapes, colors. There are different energies of community shared now, gently and silently. That calm awareness moves now inside. Inside to smell, taste, see, hear, and touch. That the special world around us. Inside to listen to the conversations and the thoughts which race through our minds. Quietly observing even the judgments about what we are doing right now. Just allowing this quiet perception of sensation and thought helps our awareness deepen. Perhaps we can touch the space behind the thoughts, behind the sensations, behind the feelings. Perhaps now we can take a few moments to simply rest in the silent spaces within ourselves. Our wellness is all that is required for this, Seder. Slavery depends on the limiting of awareness. As thoughts and perception become mirrored in habit, our world increasingly reflects the limitations we helped to create. We were enslaved, and then we were free. We were free, and then we were enslaved. We are enslaved, and then we shall be free again. The cycle spells our evolution. The process is not mistake, but by design. We create our slaveries to give us appreciation, precious opportunities for awakening and growing beyond our old scripts. We meet not to confirm our identity as slave or pharaoh, victor or victim or victor. We meet to celebrate our continuing journey. We meet to liberate the energies now stuck in slavery. So begin the next step of our journey. As individuals, as a community, we begin with a moment of silence and out of silence light. In every beginning, there is darkness, a void without definition, without end, simplicity, nothing yet everything. Out of darkness can light emerge. With the light comes contrast, shape and form, beginnings and ends, night and day, and a growing awareness of the separations, the distinctions that seem to greet us at almost every turn. Once we learn to distinguish, we begin to choose one way, one thing, one feeling over another. Our choices become preferences. Our preferences become attachments. Our attachments become prisons, our Egypts. But together, we gather. I apologize. This is one prayer that I should add on here. Blessed are you, eternal one, our God, ruler beyond the time and space, who makes a distinction between what that is holy and that what is not yet holy, between light and darkness, between a people called Israel and all their peoples, between the seventh day of rest and 6 days of labor, who distinguishes the special holiness of the Sabbath from the special holiness of this festival. Blessed are you, Holy One of all being, who makes separations between one form of holiness and another. Tonight we gather as a community with a shared intent to begin a journey from Egypt to a promised land, from slavery to freedom, to tell the story of an ancient Exodus, to write our own stories of Exodus that begins even now. We initiate our journey with a symbolic meal called Seder. Seder means order, a sequence of ritual acts, blessings, readings, and songs that has evolved over hundreds of years. Apologize. We begin our Seder with light. The light we bless links us to those who have ventured before us and all those who will follow. It is reflected in these candles, but it is carried inside each of us. This is light that will guide us through the wilderness that comes between every Egypt and every promised land. So I say, it now becomes the Passover story. Mo's Haggadot, and the Haggadot, as I explained, is essentially the prayer, the explanation. The reader that for performing this the Seder. Most Haggadot begin the count with these words: "We were once slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt." Usually, omitting is a recalling of how we came to Egypt in the first place. This is the part of the story is critical for us to help us see the pattern of slavery to freedom. To slavery, through which we revolve most of our lives. Each solution becomes our next problem. Each promised land, our next Egypt. So our account of Passover tale begins thusly. During the time of Jacob, a great famine spread over Canaan, the land of our ancestors. Food could be found in only one place, Egypt, where it had been stockpiled in anticipation of the shortage. Why was Egypt alone prepared? Joseph, the son of Jacob and Rachel, predicted the famine when he interpreted the Pharaoh's dream of seven thin cows devouring seven fat cows, and seven thin ears of corn devouring seven full ears. Ironically, Joseph was brought to Egypt as a slave, but later became Pharaoh's right-handed man. So Egypt's own tale sweeps from freedom to slavery and back again. Jacob and his descendants were welcomed to Egypt, which because of its food was a promised land. They were given plenty to eat and were permitted to settle in Goshen, a fertile area of Egypt. For many years they thrived and multiplied. Generations later, a Pharaoh, who knew nothing about Jacob or Joseph, came into power, and fearing the people of Israel, made them slaves. Thus, Egypt, the promised land, became Mitzrayim, a tight place, a place of limitation. Egypt in Hebrew, Mitzrayim, literally means to be confined, a prison. God heard the Israelites suffering and called to Moses through the revelation at the burning bush. Moses is not mentioned in most Haggadot to avoid the impression that we were saved by him and not directly by God. We are to understand that the very same energy that Moses knew calls to each of us, and each in hearing seeks to free self and others from slavery that renewed freedom always reveals. God instructed Moses to go to Egypt, to Pharaoh, and demand that the Pharaoh free the Israelites. Moses did what he was told. Pharaoh not only refused, but increased the Israelites' workload by requiring them to gather their own straw to make the bricks. The Israelites were even more miserable than before. So Moses cried out to God, who sent Moses back to Pharaoh with the start of what became the 10 plagues. First, all the water would be turned into blood if Pharaoh did not let the people go. When Pharaoh declined, the water turned to blood. Pharaoh eventually capitulated, but before the Israelites were actually free, Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he changed his mind. Blood was followed by frogs, lice, fleas, and so on. Each time, the Pharaoh gave in only to harden his heart after the plague was lifted. In some instances, the Torah, the first five books of Moses, explicitly states that it was God who had hardened Pharaoh's heart. Why does God harden Pharaoh's heart if God wants the Israelites free? Perhaps the power of the plagues was for Israel rather than Egypt. Perhaps the Israelites had to trust this deeper power enough to take the risk the wilderness was to offer. So plagues can be seen not so much as a force to persuade Pharaoh, but persuade the Israelites of the power of the Spirit, the power of their God. The plagues got progressively more striking until the final plague, which God killed the firstborn in every Egyptian household. The Israelites were untouched, having smeared a lamb's blood over their doorposts so the angel of death would pass over their households. We might well wonder whether something deeper is happening in this ancient tale. Certainly God would know which houses were to be left and untouched, and which visited by death. Perhaps the symbols served ourselves. Perhaps the first guerrilla action of history, some of us stole into Egypt's homes with violence. It is clear that each of us, to be redeemed, must be required to step forward by forming some symbolic act. The 10 plagues was too much for Pharaoh to bear. He finally released the Israelites. They gathered up their flocks, their precious, and some even Egyptian treasures, and headed out into the wilderness. Pharaoh had yet another change of heart. He ordered his entire army after the Israelites, who found themselves trapped between the advancing Egyptians and the Red Sea. But the wonders were not over. The waters of the Red Sea parted. The Israelites crossed onto dry land. When the Egyptians fell, the sea came crashing down upon them. The Israelites' journey in that wilderness, like our own, held great difficulties and disappointments. But we went on to Mount Sinai and the Torah and the ever more expanding waterings. We became a people. It was hard enough getting ourselves out of Egypt, but even greater challenge emerging during the years of our wandering. The take up getting Egypt out of ourselves. An entire generation died in that wilderness, but we survived to enter the promised land. And we found our home in space and time. And it is said in each and every generation. In each and every generation, everyone must feel that she, has personally gone out of Egypt. It is said, "You shall tell your child on that day, I do this because of what God did for me when I came out of Egypt." That's Exodus 13:8. Not only did the Holy One of blessing redeem our ancestors, but the Holy One redeemed us with them. As it said, "And he brought us out from there so that he might bring us in and give us the land which he had promised to our ancestors." Deuteronomy 6:23. The Torah presents us with an enduring metaphor that supports the journey we each are asked to travel. Like our ancestors in historical Egypt, we too are plagued when we resist the risk of freedom. When we deny our integrity, our honesty, we invite sharp pains of body, of heart, of mind, and of spirit. Our own plagues urge our release. We do not pretend that outer circumstances do not enslave us as well. We simply realize on this night that the depths of our responsibility, notice how that word came about, we help engender the slavery we know. And then at this point, we'd be picking up our wine. We fill up our wine. Tonight, we drink 4 cups. These 4 cups for the 4 promises God made to the people of Israel, enslaved in Egypt. I will free you. I will deliver you. I will redeem you. I will make you to my people. According to the rabbis, each cup should be filled to the brim, but we need only to fill halfway down. Wine in itself is a symbolic of enslavement to many, yet it is also possessed qualities enhancing of the experience of liberation. Perhaps there is nothing in this world which is in itself is both good and bad. We determine that nature, for we encounter it. Thus, wine has a very spiritual context to it. It is both has two. It's almost like a duality in one, but not duality. It is the yin and yang. The four cups also represent the four seasons of the year, the four corners of the earth, and the four realms in which we must find and express our freedom. The physical, emotional, intellectual, spiritual aspects of ourselves. Tonight, the four cups will also serve as chapter headings and our own tales of Exodus, for they are the signposts on any journey from slavery to freedom. Our four cups will stand for awareness, blessing, choice, deed. This, of course, I did in my last show, but it will go specifically as if it was now. I raise the first cup of awareness. The first cup is awareness. Awareness is always the first step toward true change. We seek to awaken to the awareness that we hold the keys to our slavery and our freedom. We seek to remember that the world reflects our own beliefs back to us. Now we set the cups down. Like the Israelites in Egypt, we are not simply enslaved by others, by external masters. It is not a Pharaoh outside who keeps us bondage. We carry Pharaoh within ourselves. We keep ourselves stuck with limiting thoughts like, I can't, I'm not good enough, I'm not ready yet, I don't deserve better. We trap ourselves by holding on to fear and anger and unwillingness to forgive. We refine ourselves by living in the past or the future, never fully experiencing the present moment. And we imprison ourselves by acting according to what we think others think. We bind ourselves by being too quick to blame others for our perceived misfortunes. We limit ourselves by hardening our hearts in jealousy and judgment. We deny ourselves the freedom to be ourselves through pretense, pretending that things are okay when they are not, pretending that we are not feeling alive when we are not. We are all slaves. We are enslavers. Only we can set ourselves free. And I should say, let our people go. Let our people go. Let our people go. As we prepare to share the blessing of the first cup, we are asked to focus our awareness at the moment. And in the moment to become conscious of the ways in which we keep ourselves enslaved. Enslaved to our fears, doubts, and confusion. Enslaved to the negative judgments we fear from others and lavish on ourselves. Enslaved to the pretense that keeps us from realizing and expressing who we truly are. And I hold up the line and I say, blessed is the Holy One of all being, our God, who creates this fruit of the vine, who heightens our awareness as we shard. Drink it. Then I point to a thing called carpus. This is green. Some people look at it as it's usually parsley, as if you're seeing the plate. The spring is a time of renewal and growth. We eat a green vegetable to symbolize the reawakening of life, revival of hope. We dip this vegetable into salt water, a reminder of the tears we shed through the suffering as slaves. But the salt water also symbolizes the nourishment of plant and person. Perhaps even the tears we shed can support new growth, new evolution in our lives. So we dip our parsley or celery into the water, into the salt water, and I say, before we eat it, blessed are you, Eternal One, Spirit of the universe, who creates the fruit of the earth. Now I would take, we have four slices of matzah in between, and I will break one within it. This is often called the Afikoman. But I, before I do this, I hold up the four slices of matzah, and I will say this. This is the bread of affliction that our ancestors ate in the land of Egypt. It also is the land of simplicity that we shall share tonight. May all who are hungry come and eat. May all who hunger for freedom join in our Seder. It is customary for the younger person to ask four questions. But anyone may ask these to them, although these questions have become standardized. So here are the four questions as I fill up the second cup. Why is this night different from all other nights? On all other nights, we eat either bread or matzah. Why on this night do we eat only matzah? On all the nights, we eat all kinds of vegetables. Why on this night must we eat bitter herbs? On all other nights, we do not usually dip our vegetables even once. Why on this night do we dip them twice? On all other nights, we eat either sitting or up or reclining. Why on this night do we eat reclining? You ask, why on this night do we eat? So here are the answers. Why do we eat only unleavened bread? The simple answer is that our ancestors left Egypt very quickly. There was no time to bake for the journey. But the sun beat down on their dough as they carried it out and baked it into flatbreads called matzah. But on a mere or more symbolic level, the leavening in ordinary bread, chametz, the leavening, the expanding, blowing up, represents the puffed up quality of our ego. It is this puffery that enslaves us. Our ego, our alter ego, puffs up, becomes our own taskmaster when it pretends at all to be the all of who we are. When we feed that alter ego. So for the 8 days of Passover, we refrain from that puffed up bread, the chametz, the unleavened bread, in the outer world to symbolize our return to simply being who we truly are, our true selves, our inner selves. That is the symbolism of it. Now, we share this bread of simplicity after reciting the following blessing. And I say, blessed are you, Holy Eternal One, of all being our God, who brings forth sustenance from earth. Blessed is the Holy One of being our God, who hallows us with the sacred paths, calls on us to share this bread of simplicity. And then we would eat this bread. And there was a famous quote by Jonathan Omer. One has to know the fullness of one's ego before that can be relinquished. And then you ask, why do we even eat bitter words? This is to remind us of the bitterness of slavery. May its harsh taste persuade us to refrain from imposing suffering on ourselves or others. In one sense, the bitter herbs are like a homeopathic remedy. The principle behind homeopathy is that by ingesting substance with this characteristic of a particular disease, our body's immunity to that disease is stimulated, strengthening it. We ingest bitter herbs to strengthen our resistance to bitter bonds of slavery. So now we would eat this bitter herbs by dipping it. And then some people would do bitter herbs. And of course, the second one would be what I call horosa, which I'll explain. So, blessed are you, Eternal One, our God, who is universal spirit, who sanctifies us with the paths of holiness and gives us the paths of eating this bitter herb. Now, the point of was the like I just mentioned, they'll dip the matzah with like horseradish or bitter. That was that point. And then there would be a thing where they take two pieces of matzah and they stick with horeset. And horeset is to symbolize the mortar of the mud that was used to make the buildings of slaves. In the first century, when the temple was built, was still intact. The great teacher Hillel used to take matzah and make a sandwich with maror in the middle and practice called korach. This symbolic act has been shared over centuries. So some people put maror and some people maror, but that's all the symbolic of it. Now, why do we dip herbs twice? We dip our parsley into salt water to remind us of the greenery that comes to life in the springtime, as well as the tears shed by slaves to whom springtime brings no life. And we dip bitter herbs in horoset and mixture that reminds us of the mixture of clay and straw our ancestors used to make bricks. Why is horoset sweet? Even though the Israelites labored long hours under scorching sun, their food was rationed. They sometimes were beaten. Their male infants were put to death. Our ancestors found a certain amount of comfort in Egypt. Everything was decided for them. They knew they were supposed to be, what they're supposed to be doing all the time, where their meals would come from, and where they would sleep. Their lives were predictable and secure. That horoset, that sweet, became what is slavery. The slavery is bitter. It's security. It's a security blanket. Think about it. That security blanket that you want sometimes has a bitter end, as they say. Why do we lean or recline at the table? Because at the time of our ancestors, only free people were permitted to relax and enjoy their meals. Leaning is one way to rejoice in our celebration. Then there is our tradition, speaks of four children: the wise, the wayward, the simple, the sleeping. But it also speaks of our four worlds, which is a very Kabbalistic way of looking at our worlds. We have in our four worlds Atzilut, which is toward the place of nothingness; the Birah, which is heading toward, is the direction of where obviously is spanning lights. In these realms, by the way, there's no light or dark. Then there's the Yetzirah, which is almost like the dream areas. And there's Asya, which is what we see in our 5D world. Those are the four worlds: Atzilut, Birah, Yetzirah, Asya. All are essential to the divine plan of the creation. Each manifests a different aspect of the divine. All the children, all over their ways, are integral to the Jewish path, symbolic of the four levels of awareness. Each is imbued with a unique way of perceiving the one. Only by recognizing and responding to them all are we as individuals, as people, whole. The wise one, her wisdom becomes beloved. Yet sometimes she is enchanted with her own intelligence. Teach her to use her abilities with humility and measure. The wayward one, his mistake is that he perceives of himself as evil. Show him that his wickedness is not his birthright. It is a chosen trait, a trait from he can set himself free. It must, however, be clear to him that his current behavior will not earn him redemption. The simple one, don't be fooled by her simplicity. She may be well aware of her genius, but she does not flaunt it. She knows the destructive tendencies within her, but maintains her innocence. The sleepy one, he is a child who is unable to speak. He is unaware of his unique capabilities, unaware of what he sees in others. His soul is like tinder. It waits to be ignited by the spark of God within, by something who would tell him that just that, with the right words in the right way. We all, to varying degrees, have aspects of four children, these four children, the four selves within us. We strive to integrate the positive elements and rechannel the negative. As we learn to hear the voice of the children, as we learn how to respond to them, let us learn how to deal with the voices of the different selves, including the children within us. Only by integrating them all are we whole and complete. We were often refused to give up whatever we believe enslaves us until we felt compelled to do so by some outside force. Our bodies, our environment often seem to give us even more emphatic messages until we finally listen and make changes in our lives. Although traditionally perceived as motivators for the Egyptians, the 10 plagues may also have been signals to our ancestors, a showing of strength from God who could support them in their flight from Egypt. How much pain we cause ourselves and others by our inability to sense the energies of spirit through all the beings. I'll explain the plagues. As we name each of the 10 plagues, we spill a little wine from our cups to acknowledge the destruction of any person, even an enemy, diminishes our joy. I'll read these both in English and Hebrew. These are the plagues which in ancient times taught the awesome power of one God whom all else is. They say Dam, blood, Sfardea, frogs, Kinim, vermin, Aru, flies, Dever, cattle disease, Shechin, boils, Barad, Hail, Arbe, locust, Hoshech, darkness, Mekat, Mekavot, death of the firstborn. The plagues that prod us as individuals to grow may include headaches, insomnia, substance abuse, even disease. Plagues that endanger our societies or our planet. Thus urge us to collectively inaction, including war, starvation, homelessness, the threat of our environmental destruction, the thinning of what's happening within between our environment and our survival, of our species that are around us, our earth. We now call upon our own plagues, as well as those we see at world large. We may spill a drop of wine for each plague you hear, so you may drop a wine and call out to the things that you see that are our plagues that we must remove. Perhaps war, perhaps separation, perhaps division, perhaps teaching of hate, hate teaching your kids to hate, teaching my God is your God better than your God. All these, the greed, the removal of the monetary system, our healthcare system, our right to healthcare, our to live like normal lives, our true enduring to relate to each other and not judge one another for who we are, the right to choose for the woman, the right to choose for any person, the right to choose to marry who we want to marry, in the suitability of our sexual preference. Anybody can drop these things. And I think overall, love and light and peace upon our earth and all ourselves. No more wars I would put down. And no more hate, no more division. I think we need to change our ways of looking at ourselves and our universe. Okay. We have now poured away many drops of wine from the sorrows and evils of this world, yet a nearly full cup remains. We lift our cups in praise to the one who fills our lives with abundance of joy and goodness. We utter thanks and prayer and sing praise to the eternal one who performed wonders for our ancestors and for us. That one being leads us out of slavery into freedom, out of joy, out of sorrow into joy, out of darkness into light, out of bondage into redemption. Now you may put these down. And of course we would sing Hallelujah. Open in the praise you would serve the eternal. Praise the name of the eternal one. And then we lift the cups again. This is now the cup of blessing. The only way out of Egypt, out of suffering, is to bless who we are now. Where are we now? Where are we now? Blessing speaks acceptance, not resignation. Blessing frees us in the moment so we can move on. Resignation binds us to the moment and to the past. and condemning us to remain there. Take a moment to forgive yourself for donning again in the shackles of slavery. Take a moment to appreciate all your personal slaves were once responses to other problems. And we raise our cups. Deepest blessing we open to you, eternal one of our being, the one who creates the fruit of the vine. And of course, we will drink that second cup. The fullest acceptance comes through blessing. We now bless who we are, where we are, who we are with. A moment truly blessed opens us more profoundly to the possibility of change. I say, blessed are you, Eternal One, ruler of time and space, who keeps us in life always, who support our unique unfolding, who brings us to this moment for blessing. And of course, now we would have our meal, big old meal, whatever you eat. And then after we finish eating, of course, we do a grace after the meal, thanking God for the universe for our meal. It is interesting. Some people do blessings before the meal. There are certain parts you do blessing. There often there's a blessing after your meal. And that is called rachamim, the rochem. Then there's things, now we come into part of the third cup of choice. Once we became aware of our stuckness and blessed the world we find, we are free to create anew. Well, what shall we create? Constructive change requires direction, purpose, goal. This is the cup of choice. It challenges us to create and hold an image of the promised land. We seek through our exodus this year for the image that we hold are the templates of our realities. Now we would set down the cups. Like our Egypts, our individual promised lands will differ. Unlike the literal destination of our ancestors, our promised lands may not be the geographical locations. Many of our promised lands will be intangible, a feeling, an experience, an achievement. Take a moment, perhaps with your eyes closed, to allow an image of yourself in your promised land to form in one's own mind. Take a moment to choose. Choose is out of manifestation. You choose, you think, you create. Thoughts are things. Your world is your choice. We empower choices by expressing them aloud as affirmative. We do this through a ritual called Fenrich, which is a custom among Sephardic Jews. One person at each table will take maybe a little piece of matzah and a napkin and clothes, and then holds the bag in the dominant hand in front of his or her and rests it behind their shoulder. And then I would say, there are belongings slung over their shoulders, and the children of Israel followed the word of Moses. And they would say, Nechiah, from where do you come? And the answer would be Mitzrayim, the land of Egypt. And then they, Fenrich, where are you headed? And they say, Yisrael, the promised land. And all would say, may our choices and promises be for good in your sight, Eternal One, the source of your being, our Redeemer. And then I would express, in the wilderness there are also no guarantees. Now Martin Luther King Jr. once expressed probably a great explanation of, and we've heard it, we've got some difficult days ahead, but it really doesn't matter with me now, because I have been to the top of the mountain. I won't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. He's allowed me to go to the mountain, and I've looked over and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get that to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. And of course he would sing, "He shall overcome, we shall overcome. We shall overcome, for deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome someday. We walk hand in hand, we shall be unchained. We are not afraid, we shall be free, we shall be in peace." As you lift up this cup of choice, and take your image of your promised land, and flow through your choice, your affirmation. We bless the Eternal One of all being, our God, who creates the many fruits from which we choose. And that becomes the fourth cup, the cup of deed. Lao Tzu once said, "A journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step." So you must take a step. No matter how good the intentions are, with it, it is paved. A road doesn't get you anywhere. In other words, it needs to be paved. It needs to be led. It has to have intention behind it. There must be a deed. You must do. You just can't choose. You must do it. You have, when you manifest or put out your choice of things, you've created a bridge and a road. You still have to walk on it. There is a famous rabbi called Rabban Gamliel. He's a 2nd century sage that said, "One who fails to explain the 3 symbols of the Seder has failed to his or her duty." We have explained 2 of the symbols, matzah and the bitter herbs. The 3rd symbol is the Passover offering, usually represented on the Seder plate by a shank's bone of lamb or poultry neck. The 3rd symbol of the Seder plate, along with the egg, that also represents an ancient way of sacrifice, are the only items not eaten. The Hebrew word for Passover, Pesach, refers to the lamb, which the people of Israel sacrificed on the night of the 10th and final plague. They smeared lamb's blood on the front doors so the angel of death would pass over their houses and enter only Egyptian houses. Only those who performed this affirmative act, this deed, were to be redeemed. Like our ancestors enslaved in Egypt, we cannot commence our exodus or our journey to freedom unless we perform some conscious deed. Such an act necessarily entails leaving behind that which is uncomfortable and secure. Such an act, therefore, involves a risk. To laugh is to risk appearing the fool. To weep is to risk appearing sentimental. To reach out is to risk involvement. To expose ourselves is to risk being seen. To hope is to risk disappointment. To try is to risk failure. To love is to risk loss. To live is to risk dying. The greatest hazard in life is to risk nothing. When we risk nothing, we forfeit our God-given opportunity to learn, feel, grow, change, love, and heal. Chained by the fear, we are enslaved. Only when we risk are we truly free. This cup is the cup of deed. Our actions can speak new choices and great integrity when supported by blessing and awareness. As you prepare to drink this cup, you might close your eyes and imagine yourself taking the first step of your journey from slavery to freedom. Envision yourself gently taking that risk, uttering that word, or performing that deed that will make your exodus real. Let the image reflect love and compassion to you and those around you. You know, we all raise the cups. And we all raise our cups in an act that symbolizes the first step on our journey to freedom. We bless the one who gives us the strength and conviction and courage to make that journey real. Blessed are you, Eternal One of all being, honor God,
who is the universal spirit who creates this fruit of the vine. And we, of course, drink the fourth cup. And then we have a welcoming of Elijah, or Eliyahu. Behold, I'm sending to you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great awesome day of the Eternal One, to turn the hearts of parents to their children and the hearts of children to their parents. It is said that Elijah the prophet was a man of great courage who endeavored to bring peace to the world. According to the tradition, Eliyahu Elijah would return during the herald coming day of the Mashiach, the Messiah, and the beginning of an age in which humankind will live at peace in the world of abundance and love. On a spiritual level, the Mashiach is not, the Messiah is not even an individual. It is rather a state of consciousness, an enlightenment way of being, for each of us strive toward. The Mashiach day can be a way of enlightenment, the way of a Buddha, the way of, that is what we're reflecting for those out there. You can look at the Messianic, the real Messianic is not a person, it's a way, it's a direction. It's not an individual, but rather a state of consciousness, an enlightened way of being for who we each must be. We are all Mashiachs, we are all Messiahs. When each of us reflect that consciousness in our homes, workplaces, and communities, we will experience the peace and abundance and love that mark the Masonic age. We demonstrate the willingness to give of ourselves through the Mashiach, the Messianic within us, into being by pouring wine from each of our cups into the cup we have reserved for Eliyahu Elijah. So now we fill Elijah's cup. And then in tradition, we would open the door so that Elijah, his essence, may enter each house where a Seder is held. We understand, however, the opening that Elijah awaits is an opening of the heart. And so we open a door to the outside as a reminder that each of us must strive to open up on the inside. We invite the spirit of Elijah to fill within our hearts, that we might celebrate the Messiah, the Mashiach, within each of us. And of course, the doors open, and there's a moment of silence. And then everybody would sing, Eliyahu, Eliyahu Hanavi, Eliyahu HaTishbi, Eliyahu, Eliyahu HaGiladi, Bimira Beranu, Yavo, Eliyahu, Mashiach ben David, Mashiach ben David. May the prophet of Elijah come soon in our time with the energies of the Messiah, descendant of David. And it's Shalom. And that is, then comes the conclusion of the Seder. And the conclusion of our Seder is complete. It writes customs. We depart now in our individual and collective journeys into that wilderness which comes between every Egypt, every promised land. May each have the faith and integrity and perseverance to reach our promised land. May we not have strayed too far when we celebrate Passover next year. And then we all say, Shana Taba Yerushalayim, next year Jerusalem, next year our promised land. So that was a Seder. See, we can all be part of a Seder. It all reflects us. It is in each and every part of us. That's what it was meant. So I will read again. Every created entity has a spark of godliness within it, a pinpoint of divinity that constitutes its soul. When we utilize something to serve the Creator, we penetrate its shell of mundanity and revealing and realizing its divine essence. Thus we elevate these sparks, reuniting them with their source. So said Rav Yitzhak Luria, the Ari. And I hope you enjoy this. And I'm going to close with another song by Ofrahaza. The other one I was had popped on was Im Nil Alu. But this one, like the second song here, is called Kol Neshama, which I think relates to everything we're talking about. It's an extraordinary song. And this is God Bless Her Soul. She had passed away a number of years ago. A dear friend. God bless her. And here's her song.
Thank you.
Thank you, and God bless you all, and have a truly glorious weekend. Thank you, and God bless.